And welcome back once again to At the Devil's Ball. I am Nathaniel, the host. I'll be joined shortly here by my co-host Samuel Numene, doing the intro a little bit solo this week because we're doing something a little bit different, in which we talk about This is highly irregular. We seem to be under attack by other theme music. What? Oh, you think it's done? Okay, yeah. And it's going away. Okay, well, the purpose of that hackneyed exercise in which I pretend to be assaulted by theme music is that we are, for this episode, we are participating in a sort of group commune podcast type deal called All the Horror 2020. You can find it at hashtag All the Horror, where I guess 31 different podcasts will all be participating in this program to help cross promote each other. You could follow at All the Horror at All the Horror 18. Their website is also allthehorror18.wixsite.com. You could also follow all of the podcasts, find a list of all of them if you are so interested by looking into Podchaser. It's a website that you can go to. You can search for All the Horror 2020, and you will find a list of all of them. And they're also doing a fundraiser for Scares That Care, a really wonderful horror-based charity, which talks about helps people with primarily with cancer, but also with burns victims. They took over Kane Hodder's burn victim charity. Kane Hodder, of course, being the man who played Jason Voorhees more times than anybody else, played him in 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And so that's really cool. Scares of Care is a really great organization. I've checked it out. And if you can give, please do. Also, check out the other podcasts that are going to be a part of this. Again, the hashtag is All the Horror. And you can find it on Podchaser, the whole list. And in that spirit, we have a gentleman by the name of George who's going to be joining us as our guest this week. For this very, very special episode. It's going to be part of that All the Horror thing. George runs his own podcast known as The Best Little Horror House in Philly. We'll be talking to him a bit about that when we have him on after the jump. And this week we're going to be talking about Haunt. Myself, my co-host Samuel Numene, and George are going to be talking about the movie Haunt. It is available to stream on Shudder currently. It was released there, I think, exclusively. So it is available there, and it's still there. Haunt is a fun little film about a group of characters that go to a haunted house attraction. Turns out the people running it are psychopaths, and hilarity, as they say, ensues. It was written and directed by Scott Beck and Brian Woods, and stars Katie Stevens, Will Britton, Lauren Alyssa McLean, Andrew Lewis Caldwell, Shazi Raja, Shizer Helford, and features also as well as Philip Johnson Richardson and Chaney Morrow as my personal favorite, the weird ghost guy that you'd see in this movie. And the production design by Austin Gorg, art direction Jason Perrine, set decorator Kay Wolfley, and the costuming Nancy Collini. All four of those are very, very important as they are very, very crucial to Haunt as a film. So with that, again, without further ado, I'll bring on my co-host Samuel Numene. And we will approach, and George, our guest, and we will approach Haunt with our trademark positivity and constructive analysis. And so that should be good fun. So stay tuned, and we'll see you after the jump. Okay, and now I'm joined by my co-host, Samuel Numene.
Hello.
And our guest this week, George... shit. What was your last name, George?
Heffler
of the Best Little Horror House in Philly podcast. And we've had some audio issues, so I'm a little flustered, so we'll bounce back from that. So, George, tell us a little bit about the Best Little Horror House in Philly before we get started talking about Haunt.
Sure. So we are the podcast where we talk about the best horror movie ever made, according to our guest, at least. And so basically what that entails is I'm completely hands off in the decision making process. I talk to our guests who's coming on, and as long as they pick a movie that hasn't already been chosen, they can pick any horror movie that they feel is the best horror movie ever made. bring it on. And for the duration of the podcast, I agree that it is the best horror movie ever made. And we talk about it like it's the best. We don't soft sell the enthusiasm or anything at all. It's a nice, positive place where people can really feel comfortable talking about the movie that they love and not feel like they're going to, you know, have to deal with pushback on that.
That's great. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. And it's really nice because we've had a bunch of movies that I wouldn't necessarily expect to get picked before some of the like big tentpole ones. Like, we haven't done any Friday the 13th movies yet. We've only done New Nightmare for Nightmare on Elm Street. But we've had like Ju-on the Grudge too, and and Lost Highway from David Lynch.
now, has there ever been any movies like that were like really a struggle for you to come to as a, you know, from the direction of, yes, it's the best horror movie ever?
Yeah, you know, I try to keep an open mind, but there are certainly subgenres that are more to my taste than others are. And so with ones like that, you know, I haven't made a secret of the fact that I'm not really a found footage guy. And we've had people come on with like Paranormal Activity. And and so even for not like even if I'm not connecting with it on an aesthetic level or something like that, there's so much contextually about that movie that really changed the way things are done. So there's a lot of historical stuff that I can dig into with that.
A lot of cultural phenomenon kind of stuff too. Yeah,
exactly. And usually I feel like if somebody is choosing this as the best horror movie ever made, there's gotta be something for me to connect with. I gotta at least be able to find one aspect of the movie that I think is functioning at a top level, because otherwise it wouldn't have connected with someone this much. And so kind of going in with that approach definitely helps to you know, hook into something that I can use as leverage, at least.
Right.
Sure.
So it's like the old saying, like, you know, every comic is somebody's favorite comic, you know.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And that's always been the case. Yeah. Someone's actor is always their favorite actor. Yeah. Very, very cool. And I saw that you had like Anthony DeBlasi, so you're kind of slumming it here, hanging out with us.
No, hey, we have been lucky enough to have some really great guests. Anthony DeBlasi was a joy to talk to. He picked Predator, which is a movie that I love as well, so we really got to dive into that. But, you know, I've also had to just hit up my friends and be like, hey, I need a guest this week. Please come talk to me about a horror movie. Yeah. So, you know, it ranges. And I think that getting a broad variety of people's involvement in the field itself can really help in terms of approaching things from various perspectives.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
So what made you choose a Haunt for this week?
Well, he didn't. I had originally asked him. I had originally asked him if he wanted to do The Houses That October Built, and as he aforementioned, he doesn't particularly care for found footage.
Right.
I said, "How about Haunt?"
Right.
You know, kind of the same thing. Which is a great segue. So, I mean, George, I guess we'll start off with you. What in general did you think about Haunt?
I was really pleasantly surprised. One of my least favorite theater experiences of all time was the movie Hellfest. And Hellfest came out in 2018.
Yeah.
And it just, every inch of it felt soulless to me. It felt like it was made by a committee. There, all the characters had the same voice, and that voice was annoying. And all of these things just...
Did Rob Zombie co-write that one? Or
he may as well have. May as well have. I should also say that Rob Zombie's Halloweens are the only two movies banned from the Best Little Horror House.
Ooh, that sounds like a challenge to me.
Yeah. I don't blame you on that one. I have a hard time with almost anything Rob Zombie's done, honestly, but...
Yeah, but I digress. And basically, the point I was making is that my distaste for that movie was so strong, and I knew that it would at least connect with some people who aren't like I mean, this is going to sound super, like, I'm going to sound like a jerk for saying this, but, you know, it's a little more mainstream, people who don't go see a ton of horror movies, but it's going to connect with people who are just like, hey, it's October, let's go see a horror movie in theaters.
Yeah.
And so much of it felt like a cash grab. The ending was such like a sequel bait kind of ending that I was just so angry walking out of it because I was like, it's going to work. This is going to succeed.
I think we've all been in that side of situation at the theater. Yeah. I haven't seen Hellfest myself, but I know I can name movies that have made me leave, you know, feeling the same thing, you know?
Yeah. And so this basically takes the concept of Hellfest, which is, of course, it's not the first time that doing a haunted carnival or anything has been done. But that was certainly the most recent in my experience, and it left such a bad taste in my mouth that having someone do it even competently was such a joy for me to behold. And so
breath of fresh air right there, yeah.
So I had a lot of fun with it, especially when I was keeping Hellfest in the back of my mind.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that Haunt is sort of, to me, is sort of like the, if you took Hellfest and the Houses of October built and merged them into one film, Haunt is basically that film.
Right.
Right. Because you have, you know, House of October built was based on this sort of the extreme haunt, phenomena.
Right.
And based on an actual documentary about the extreme haunt phenomena. And then the Hellfest, of course, was the concept of people go to a haunted house and there's actually a real killer inside bumping them off one by one. I didn't mind Hellfest that much.
I haven't actually seen it yet.
Yeah.
Never bothered with it.
Yeah. I mean,
it just kind of looked like it wasn't my thing. So I'm like, I'll get to it if I get to it.
It's nothing special. Yeah. But this is sort of like right there in the middle between these two, those two films. And so, yeah, I mean, I thought Haunt in general, it feels a little bit generic to me, but I think that there is a lot of really positive things about it. I say
the script feels a little generic, but the way it's acted and shot and, you know, put together puts it a step above that. I know I personally went into it, you know, with the mindset of I'm watching like a sci-fi original movie, so I had real low expectations.
It
blew past them. I mean, it's you know, there's things that I would have done different, but it mm-hmm. wasn't a bad watch at all either time I watched it.
Sure. Yeah, this is my second time seeing the film. I did watch it last year when it came out. This was your first time for both of you, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. And so I will say I don't think it plays as well on a second viewing, where it did in the first one.
It's got some pacing issues, especially in the first half.
I also think a lot of the reveals work as reveals, where you're like, oh, I'm like really curious about like why this guy won't take off his mask, but
once
you know,
do you still want to see my face?
Yeah, you're just like, all right, I've seen it now. I don't like, all of this tension is gone on a rewatch. So I could definitely see that being the case.
And on a rewatch, you know, the flaws in the plot, you know, kind of really present themselves more. But
Definitely not every second of this movie made sense, but.
And on the rewatch, you know, I took it kind of in the vein of, you know, there's always been these urban legends about this haunted house that nobody can get through, or killer clowns killing people in a haunted house. Yep. And if you take it less as, you know, a movie where everything is factual and more like, you know, maybe this lady's telling somebody about it, you know, mm-hmm. some of the missteps, you know, kind of are easier to gloss over, I think. You know, like the whole thing with her growing up in an abusive home, and you know, the thing with her under the bed was a little bit much, and it didn't really add anything. But if you take, you know, the kind of urban folklore aspect and, you know, go, oh well, you know, somebody probably added this to the story later or something like that, you know.
Well, I think that the abusive and I wrote this down in my notes, which was that I think there's supposed to be a thematic through line that I don't think quite works entirely. But I feel like the idea of supposed to be about the betrayal of trust, and that when you go into a haunt, you are trusting these people not to harm you.
Right.
And so I feel like there's a little bit of a through line there, where there's the idea of like her mother, her abusive home, where her father, it didn't suggest that he ever abused her, just her mother.
Right.
Right.
And then she's in an abusive relationship, and those would be two relationships that the trust has been violated in. Yeah. And then we walk into a haunt, and it's supposed to be the idea that you trust these people not to hurt you. And a lot of the helplessness of that scenario is what makes a lot of the scenes in this film work. My favorite scene that I was going to talk about was when they meet the friendly one, quote unquote, the friendly one.
Right.
Who's like, oh my God, you guys, someone's hurt. Like, someone's hurt.
Yeah, that was a nice twist. I didn't expect that to happen right there, you know?
Yeah. And
then it twisted back to, you know.
Twisted back, right. But the part that really nailed it for me was when they're talking to him and he hasn't taken off the mask and he's still a creepy image. But he's like, look, I'm going to help you guys get out of here. And they say, and Nathan, the hero, male hero, basically says, we don't need to see a manager.
Right.
We just want to go. And of course, that's the conversation you would have with like with a kidnapper. Right. You know, I don't need to talk to anybody. We didn't see anything. It really plays up that idea of like that, that helplessness of like, we can't get out of here. And, I think that scene really works. And that character really works. And then, the next favorite scene was that character as well, when he says, you know, you still want to see my face outside. Yeah. It really, although the reveal had already been done by that point that everybody was all screwed up. And of course, they meet an actual friendly guy, and he gets the back of his head blown off.
I wasn't sure until that happened if he was actually going to be a friendly guy or if it was another misdirect. I guess we'll never know for 100% certainty. But you know, because he said he was basically, you know, the new guy to this cult. You know.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing. Also, was he kind of grounds them where he's like, oh yeah, one of them is a tattoo artist and the other one, and then he gets shot. He doesn't actually get to finish his thought. But like up to that point, I was just like, okay, they're just weirdos.
Right.
I thought
it was going to be like escaped mental patients. And I was, you know, a little surprised that it was, you know, extreme body mod people. You know?
Yeah. And I mean, I guess it worked for me. I thought that the reveal of the like Mitch guy, the like friendly ghost one, when he had the like smooth face was like really,
yeah, they're giving him like a skull face basically.
Yeah, it was gross and it worked for me really well as well. I like that
scene. That whole scene worked really well because just the way that he's like, you know, oh, do you still want to see my face, and the guy's like, no. And then they show like him holding the hammer. It's like,
yeah,
oh, it's just
hammer. Yeah.
Yeah. Really well shot sequence, I thought.
Yeah.
One thing that so right around that time, we're also getting like the boyfriend story,
right?
And it
felt was real unnecessary.
That was what I was going to say, is that when they pull that out from under you, of like, it already feels tacked on for him to get the like location drop, and then he comes and he just immediately gets killed.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when I,
and really bad, really brutally killed. I mean, he got it worse than anybody else in the thing, you know.
Which is fine
because he's an asshole, you know.
Right. And I mean, like, yes, to that point, yeah, like, it's definitely there to like up the body count.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and there's a little bit. And then that's where like the flaws of this film, I think, kind of come in. There's a little bit of that Dark Knight thing too, I think, where these guys are way too prepared. Like they just like, we know exactly where everybody's gonna go at all times, up until of course they don't when they're, you know, starting to be defeated by Harper, who I think is I think the actress is very appealing.
Yes, sir.
I think that she does a pretty good job, but that character is, to me, seems very lazily written. I don't know what you guys think.
I would agree with that. I think she's a really great actor, in that she feels pretty authentic to me.
Yes.
She felt like a college student. And that I think is particularly noticeable when you compare her to the other girls that she's with, Angela and Bailey, who I don't think feel very like, they feel like actors to me, especially in comparison. But yeah, I agree that she's not given a ton to work with, except like react to everyone else having all this stuff happen to them, because she's the one who makes it out at the end. There's only so much that they can actually do to her before it becomes unrealistic that she wouldn't make it out anymore. And so like, she gets the hands thing, which is gross.
Yeah.
But
nails foot too. Yeah.
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 But yeah, it is kind of a weirdly written character, just in terms of the plot. But she does, I think she does work with what she's given in a way that is to the movie's benefit. You know, it helps to elevate it above the script.
Right. Yeah. For me, she seemed kind of like oppositely written than the rest of the characters, where the rest of the characters started off as like almost, you know, Eli Roth level stock characters from Hostel. And gradually you see more of them and they become more human and more likable characters, especially the plus size frat guy, you know, who started off like, oh, kill this guy right now. And he was, you know, pretty good at the end.
Yeah.
Whereas she started off feeling a lot more fleshed out, but by the end she felt less so. You know, it's they took more away from her character as the story went on, it felt like, as opposed to the others.
Well, I feel like, and of course, it is obviously a hindsight thing and is a critical thing. I feel like that Harper should have been the one protesting more heavily about going into the house. You know, like the idea, and of course, like I feel like there should have been more of her like being reluctant to trust Nathan, and then the idea of like her, like, I don't want to go in there, and Nathan being like, I'm going to walk you through this. Right. You know, that should have been played up a little bit more, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Than it was in the film. It is there, you know, where she's like, I don't want to go in, and offers her his hand and says, you know, I'm going to, you know, let's go inside and we'll do this. And that, and of course that comes true. He does help her through it.
Right.
He does come through. He's the only character that can really be trusted at the end of the day. To your point, I forget his name as well. The bigger guy, the other male lead.
Right. Evan.
I think. Evan.
Yeah.
Evan.
He was actually, by the end, my favorite guy in the movie.
there's some really smart stuff there. Same thing with Nathan. I think that the characters, there is a level of intelligence that does occur in this scenario, where we need to get out of here. He's like, well, look, I can, you know, I can take the hinges off the door. We just need to find an item to do that.
Yeah.
Nathan at least tries to come up with an improvised weapon with a corkscrew or whatever.
Yeah.
They handle running into characters like the friendly ghost pretty well. But
I did laugh though at how they kind of defang that intelligence, where they're like, okay, he remembered to like get the key off of Bailey, who's sitting there dying, but then he immediately drops it. Okay. And then Evan, he knows how to pick locks, and oh, we even have bobby pins. But this
it's
is
a double lock. Oh, yeah. Damn.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was funny. It didn't even like make me mad.
Right.
I noticed it and I was like, oh,
I don't need meta horror, but I mean, it would have been funny if they did a little nod to like, you know, well, the plot says you're not getting out of here, buddy. So, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
I did the one section that works really well for me in theory and then I didn't connect with it at all in execution is actually the Bailey having her arm stuck in the I don't even know, the little chamber.
Sure.
Because the idea of her like pulling her arm out and like having it accidentally run across the razors is absolutely terrifying to me. It really freaked me out real good. And then she pulls her arm out and it's just like these awful CGI cuts that open up and they cut away from so quick because they must know that it looks terrible.
Right.
Yeah. For the most part, they worked around the very small budget well with a small cast, basically one location and only a few effects shots. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that one, you know, I feel like they needed to have it in there because when she took her arm out, I thought they just put a stamp on her arm that said love. and then I'm like, oh no, never mind, you know.
Yeah, and like the cuts like open up, but then they cut away, and
right.
You never really get a sense of how hurt she is, because her arm, they wrap it up like immediately, and she's like, "Don't worry about it, I'm fine." But she's also sitting there the whole time, like bleeding out, and she like fades in and out of the conversation, and there was just I don't think that they did a good job of communicating the stakes of that trap very well.
And that was a problem throughout the movie with a lot of the actors is, you know, everybody took some damage, but then they, you know, conveniently walked it off basically, if they had to.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, she stepped on that nail. Like, I don't know if you've ever hurt your foot, but
it was ugly too. It like went right into the heel all the way up. And I said, she like degloved the palms of her hands.
And then the guy got shot at the end and, like, it had no effect on him really at all. You know? Like, all right. I can't remember that guy's name, but I kept on referring to him in my head as Mac from Always Sunny because the shirt he was wearing just kind of looked like something like that.
Yeah. Definitely did. And he takes like he's like has three bullet holes in him by the end.
Yeah.
He's like still running after her and everything.
Batter up. Yeah, he takes out the last guy with the baseball
bat. I did like that guy with the gun shooting him because I'm like, you missed it, buddy. You were right there. You pretty much missed everything.
Yeah, he was a fun character though. And and I will also say, it feels just like listening back to myself, it feels like I've only talked negatively about this movie, which I don't want to do because I do think that there's a lot to like about it. I think that the way the aesthetic is pretty spot on. I think that there's a lot of fun lighting in it, and the look of the costumes mixed
the set
with
that design was great. You know, the costumes were great, you know.
And then the fact that so many times the reveal feels not as good as the suspense, and with a lot of the, you know, tattoo people or whatever, the body modification extremists, their look under the costume was also cool and scary and fun.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely.
And so that I think is a huge part of why this works, is that the escalation actually feels escalated.
Yeah,
I'd agree with that.
And even like the first half of the haunted house where they're, you know, it's just a haunted house was really well done. And it was really well played. And, you know, the fears that everybody has going to a haunted house, they had a person who was kind of freaked out by clowns. You know, they had a person who doesn't like spiders. They had a person, you know, who doesn't like enclosed spaces. Yeah. And all the sorts of things like they did, you know, the oldest haunted house trick in the book, where it's just the eyeballs and the brains. But nobody wants to go into a place where they don't understand and put their arm in a hole where they don't know what's going to be there.
Yeah.
Even if nothing happened at the end of that, that was still a very tense scene, a very well-made scene where you're like, oh, boy.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's designed with, like, the rule of three in mind, too, where like, those two characters put their hands in and nothing happens. It's actually just kind of a gag. They're like, oh, it's spaghetti. Oh, it's a grape. And then she puts her in, I can't feel anything. Yeah, he eats it. Which is I would never
gross.
And then of course she puts her hand in and she gets a cut, and which again I think puts
out first somebody grabbed her hand and did something to it. I don't know if she cut it on her way out, but I feel like somebody grabbed her hand and did that.
He pulled the ring off too.
Right. Yeah.
Whoever it was, and they also grabbed the guy's hand.
Right.
When he was like trying to help her out.
Oh, yes, they did, I was going to say, at first we put his hand and he joked around that he was...
Right,
but then it did happen.
Then it did happen, yeah. And then I think that puts into that idea of, like, that we put our trust in these people when we go to, like, a haunted house, you know, where, you know, you do stick your hand in and you expect to find a grape, not a razor blade. And if you found a razor blade, it would be ultimately... It would be more than just being hurt. It's actually like, holy shit, I'm, you know, in danger.
Yeah.
And to your point of like, it always sounds like we're talking negative. I think Sam and I go through that every single time we do an episode.
I like to talk about the parts I like and the parts I don't like. And, you know,
try I feel to see like how we always feel like we're being too negative, and then we listen to it back. We're like, actually, we're being pretty positive. Right. as you talked about a little bit about like Hellfest or the House of October Built or like Hell House LLC.
This, Fun House too. I just watched that.
Yeah,
Toby
that's a great film. That one's well before the upcropping of the modern sort of haunted house horror film, where we've gotten a lot of these in the last few years. And I think that's in a response to the extreme haunt phenomena. Right. Like,
it's also easy to do cheap.
Yes. Yeah. One location. And they even make the joke. I think Evan finds the receipt and says,
"The spiders in the
skeleton." They went to the 99-cent store and they bought like cheap spiders. So you can get away with a lot of that stuff. But I want to talk a little bit about the extreme haunt phenomena and how kind of insane that is to me.
Right. Yeah.
Like these people going in like getting punched and having like rotten meat thrown in your face and locked in caskets and.
No, thank you.
Yeah, and I think that this movie is like sort of a response to that, of wanting to talk about that in terms where that trust escalates to a point of being uncomfortable. I've never been on one that's that extreme. The closest I went is I did one a few years back that had what they do is they basically turned out all the lights and you walk through a maze. And I actually couldn't enjoy it because I love going on these on those things to look at the production values, basically.
Right.
You know, they don't do much for me in terms of scaring me because it's people jumping out at me in a rubber mask or makeup or whatever. But I love looking at the makeup. I love looking at, and I feel like these body enthusiasts, body modification enthusiasts from this film, would make great haunters for an actual haunted house.
Absolutely,
like, it would be. They're terrifying looking, but they still look like makeup effects. But the one that I went through, I was like, I couldn't enjoy it because it was too dark, and they would have these occasional strobe effects, and basically all I could do was figure out how to get out. I kept like feeling the balls rather than enjoying the effects.
Right.
But I remember that one was enough that one of the friends that we went with refused to go in because he was like, I can't do in enclosed spaces. And so I mean, like, where I'm going with this, I guess, is that this movie is sort of like is taking that up to 11, where it wants to talk about, I think, that concept of what we put ourselves through the progressively to feel frightened.
Yeah. The only thing is, I wouldn't have sold it as an extreme haunt because it really wasn't. It was a regular haunt with killers.
Right.
And also, other than, you know, the two who at the time were just dude bros at the beginning, like, nobody would want to go to that. Don't go to an extreme house. None of these people would want to go to extreme haunted house. They just want to go to a haunted house.
Yeah. To your point about the, like, meta horror of it, and us as horror fans, like, kind of seeking, like, that in real that real life scare, I think that there's something pretty interesting there, because as much as I love horror movies and stuff, there is kind of like a remove that you find yourself at, where it's very easy to be like, okay, I'm looking at this a little more academically, I am doing a lot more analysis on it, and it's easy to not put yourself in the shoes as much. But that blending of the fourth wall that happens with even a video game, I mean, never mind a haunted house or something, that the fact that you have to actually make the decisions and walk through,
you have to be present. You know.
Yeah, I think it makes it so much more effective, and I have a hard time doing haunted houses and stuff. I mean, Eastern State Penitentiary is right around here. They do their Terror Behind the Walls. I went one time. I almost shit myself.
Yeah,
and I was like, I've done it now. I don't have to go again.
I've got Mansfield Prison like an hour and a half from me, and like I've been there through just a regular tour. It's where they shot Shawshank Redemption.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I've been there during a daytime tour. That is scary enough. Thank you. That they do a haunt like Eastern State does, and it's like, I don't know if I can do that.
Right. Yeah. And it's just so much of it is like, I think that's what makes these movies interesting is the fact that you come here expecting to quote unquote be put in danger.
Right.
Yeah. You expect to be threatened and to be put in these frightening situations,
or at the very least to be made uncomfortable, you know.
Right. And so for all of these situations to need is just a tip, such a small amount of weight in the direction of it being real,
right?
That it makes these movies feel very effective in terms of like being able to empathize with the characters and put yourself in their shoes, because you're like, I can feel this situation so vividly because it's so close to what the expected result is.
Yeah. Right.
And like I said, you know, when they ticked off, you know, a lot of the boxes of, you know, fears that people have at the beginning, that was, you know, a chance for pretty much anybody with any anxiety to get on board with at least one of them, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Like, I'm very claustrophobic. I could do like mazes or enclosed spaces, but if I had to get in that casket, no, fuck that. We're done. I'll kick down the nearest wall and run away. It's
Well,
I think I liked that emergency exit gag.
I was going to say that's one of my favorite parts too. Actually, is he's like, oh, that makes sense. I didn't remember an emergency
especially
exit.
Especially since there was parts of that haunt where it was like just pallets on the walls or chain-link fences. I'm like, you guys are big dudes. You can get through a pallet, if you put your back into it.
Yeah.
The two of them together, I believe in them.
Yeah. I was going to say the thing about feel like the chain link fence bits where they're like trying to get to their friend on the other side of the chain link fence. And I'm like, I feel like you can probably just tear this apart a little bit. Like, big enough guys that I feel like they would probably be able to do all right.
Yeah, you attack the poles and knock it out, of the concrete. It'd be all right. But, then you wouldn't have the actual great gag of them trying to reach underneath the thing to get that crowbar, which that was a tense scene, and. Mm-hmm. And even if nothing had happened, even if nothing had happened, it was still tense scene, even if they just, we got it,
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed, I actually enjoyed both the scenes involving the witch on the other side first it was the glass.
Yeah, she was the one I liked most out of all the haunters.
Yeah. Interesting. And we didn't see her face underneath the, did we see her face underneath the mask? Or
like she's just like a really old lady. Yeah. She had a fake old lady face, and then she had a real old lady face.
Okay.
It was hard to see because by the time you saw her face, because she never took her mask off. It got blasted off, by hitting her with that door. So you see it for like a half a second, but that's it.
Right. But yeah, like I liked both of those scenes. I liked the girl from the previous haunt, group going through, who obviously apparently didn't fare nearly as well as our characters.
The witch was the one who was actually doing like extreme haunt kind of stuff, because a lot of it's haunt is like, I've never been, but I've seen and I've known a couple people who've gone through it. A lot of it's like performance art, and that they do a scene.
That would actually be a really cool thing if you put a plant in the group before you and then had that plant come out and get like a fake branding on their face would actually be a pretty damn good haunt. Mm-hmm. And like you said,
that happens in the Funhouse too.
Yeah.
I think this film. I feel like haunt. Its influences are pretty clear too.
There are much worse influences to have. Yeah. I mean, the fact that it is calling back to some of these classics of the subgenre is a positive thing.
Or long lasting urban legends. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's always a part of people who go through haunted houses that are like, well, is all this going to be fake or is something going to be real? And that's what keeps you scared in them, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something else I liked about this movie, it's only 92 minutes. Respect the hell out of that. Mm-hmm. It's so easy for a movie to overstay its welcome. It's so easy.
I honestly felt it was pushing it at 92 minutes. But it wasn't in a bad way. It was just like, if this is any longer, it's going to fall apart.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. I think that it rides the line, but it cuts it off at a perfectly acceptable amount of time. And if this had even been an hour 45, that would have been too much. But
yeah, I agree.
Tapping out right around 90 is just about right.
Yep. There's a little bit of padding in this film. It probably could have worked a little bit better if they'd actually like kind of kept that tension on a shorter scale. But there's some awkward scenes like the I grew up in a haunted house monologue, and I was okay, kid.
To quote, "Don't be a menace." Message.
Yep, message. Right. And again, that as a final girl, I think she pulls off what she needs to pull off for a final girl. But in this era, she's it doesn't work enough. Like she doesn't have the personality of a final girl to the you really needed to play up the. Even more so somehow of the if you're going to pull in the abuse angle, if you're going to pull in the idea that she's coming from this troubled background, you really needed to nail that a little bit better than I think this film did.
And earlier.
Yeah, it just feels gestured at.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, she does become the final girl, but it's not until basically the postscript where the clown shows up at the house,
Right.
Oh, man. I
would have cut that myself.
So, I liked that scene, but I would have wanted it to just like cut when he like opens the door and I wanted the mom to open it. I wanted it to actually be like happening, because I was like, how the hell did she get out of the hospital and there quick enough to like set all this up? And so having it be this like last minute triumph for her.
Right.
Worked less for me than if they had just carried out the threat of what the implication was. So
yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like almost like to kind of go back to like the old Universal movies, like it's once your monster's dead, you're over your movies.
Exactly. That's gotta leave it open for a sequel, baby.
Yeah.
once they got to the car, I would have just, you know, slammed to the credits, you know.
Yeah, we didn't need to see them go to the hospital. We didn't need to see the dream sequence of her going to see her mom, and then she wakes up, and then she's like, oh, they're going to come to my house. Even though they floated that earlier with, like, them knowing, like, Evan's address.
Yeah.
They looked him up.
I did. When I thought that it was going to end, like, when I thought the dream sequence was real, and it was going to end with her, like, reuniting with her family, I was like... Wow, this sucks.
Yeah, I was like, boo. Yeah.
Well, so I was really glad that they at least didn't use that as the actual ending.
By the way, can we talk about the fact that apparently she lives an Uber ride away
from
her mother's house, but hasn't gone home in years?
Four years, she says.
Four years. She lives 10 minutes away.
Right. You
know?
And
mom
trying to figure out, she was like a teenage runaway in this at the beginning, because you know she's a college kid, so she's been out there for 4 years.
Yeah.
So she was homeless for a couple years and then somehow got into college.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think that they weren't seniors, right? They didn't. I think that they were like new.
They were.
I don't know.
They certainly didn't look like seniors.
They weren't freshmen, because they're, you know, basically all those girls were like in a sorority, it seemed like, or at least lived in the same house. So they're probably juniors.
I feel like at one point they said that they were 20 when they were like going to get into the bar. And they were like, something about fake IDs.
Right.
Maybe. The only other thing I would think was that some of them talk from their point of view as students, were some that almost suggested like a pre-med for one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to show my face around the hospital with my grades the way they are. She says.
You know, yeah. And
I dug her character, and I loved the ongoing gag of the cousins. You know, one cousin.
It's actually a good gag, yeah. How many cousins do you have? Like 25, yeah. But yeah, I mean, so it's just weird to me that, you know, again, she's apparently lives a few minutes away from home, but hasn't gone back in 4 years.
That wouldn't have worked out if she was any older than college age.
Yeah,
because you know she's still running away from her trauma and stuff like that. If you're any older than that, you start to question, like, well, why haven't you gone and rescued your mother? You know, from this?
Well, yeah. the implication seemed to be that the dad was dead. I thought that dad's not still alive.
I thought it was that maybe the mom had died or something, and that she like left the home because the dad was still there, and she finally cut him off.
And if it weren't for that final scene, it would have been okay, because, you know, she's just imagining what her house would have been.
Right.
Or imagining her mom's. You know, she should really have no way of knowing if her mom's alive or dead, probably, you know.
Yeah.
If they even live at the same place, you know.
Yeah.
Had it programmed into her phone as mom's house, though.
Right.
Like, but it's...
Well, you're not gonna program it, you know, the guy who beat my mom's house, you know.
Like I said, not every part of this movie makes sense.
Right. Yeah. I think it's like an urban legend. You know, that's the parts that don't make sense. Just like, don't worry about it. You know, it's not why you're here.
I think it's funny that there are so many places that the ending could have ended that would have worked a little bit better. Like, even if it was just her realizing that they knew the address.
Yes,
that would have worked too. When she's when she sits up in the bed and she's like, "Oh no!" Cut.
I wasn't able to find much behind the scenes information on it, but I feel like maybe they were under some sort of contractual obligation to bring it in at least 90 minutes.
Yeah,
because I said, there was padding at the beginning and padding at the end. You know, the middle was pretty tight. Mm-hmm. Although I would have liked to have seen once, you know, they start realizing that everybody's, you know, really going to hurt them. I would have liked to see a little more propulsion in the plot at that point.
Yep.
They still do a lot of like, okay, we got to this room, now we need to stand around and think before we go to the next room. It's like, well, there's maniacs with knives right over there. Could we move? You know.
Yeah.
which was everyone's favorite haunter?
Oh, Friendly Ghost for me, for sure.
It's a toss-up between Mitch, the Friendly Ghost, and the Witch. Like, the Witch was the scariest one to me. The guy, the first guy we see with the face off, the devil mask guy, was the coolest looking of them, both with and without the mask. But, you know, if I were writing the movie or, you know, reading it as a book, I would go with Mitch because it was just, you know, more the most interesting stuff he had to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would probably go Mitch as well, just because he is a little bit more fleshed out as a character, and so you get that, like, the double reveal of not just his face, but also...
Yeah, and he can do different modes, too. Like, you know, the devil guy was just like, I'm going to kill everybody.
Yeah.
The witch person was just, well, basically, I'm going to kill everybody, but I'm going to do it more theatrically than this other guy does.
Right.
And Mitch play not normal pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the devil guy... face off, like with the mask off, was very cool with the all the
that was a great look.
And stuff.
Yeah, I liked how all they looked with all of them looked without the masks, you know.
Yeah.
Even the quote unquote normal guy who just joined, you know, looked cool without the mask. He looked like, you know, hey Katie. He looked like the kind of guy who would fall in with these people. He had, you know, unwashed hair. He looked like maybe he was strung out a little bit or recovering, you know. They all worked. They all worked.
Well, I thought that there was an implied hierarchy that I thought made sense to me, like that some of them had clearly been in there longer than the others, and I feel like Mitch the Friendly Ghost was a more recent guy. Like, I got that feeling from him that he had just recently taken the plunge.
Right, up until the point where they showed the normal guy and he got shot, I thought Mitch was going to be the character who was like, oh, I did not know this was going to be like this. You know. Yeah.
Well, I think that's what works about that sequence and about that character so well, that he does actually make you as a viewer question what side he's on.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
And I think that's an excellent, and it's why, I mean, I think I've written down in my notes like four times on that one scene alone. I think it's definitely my favorite one. And it's the one where like nothing really happens. It's just dialogue.
Yeah, he can go from being creepy and off-putting to a little bit menacing to like maybe he's just, you know, still in character really well.
Yeah, like just a socially awkward guy who is like, I don't know if this is like a test or something.
When they showed, like, when he, you know, first breaks character, well, pretends to break character, goes, oh, somebody's hurt. Like, they showed, like, his, like, sneakers.
Oh, yeah.
For a second, and I couldn't figure out what that was about. Does anybody have any idea?
No.
I feel like they had showed it. Like watching, like she had like looked at a curtain and it like the shoe like ducked under at one point, didn't it?
That could be. Yeah. I thought it was going to be important later and it turned out to be nothing after that.
kind of like Bailey kind of was like where she disappears and then she reappears all of a sudden in a robe. And I was like, so is she in on it? Like I was kind of like, are we going to get that? Like it's all. There's a lot of really weird stuff that happens throughout this story that doesn't really quite track.
It's also funny, like looking back when the one friend gets killed by the witch and he's like, no, it's fine. She'll be there at the end.
Right.
It's when you look back with the knowledge that no, she isn't, it's like, why is he telling them?
Well, especially since it didn't, you know, they've killed that first lady who was in the group ahead of them, which first of all, how do they keep having these groups come here? But whatever. Well, when she killed that girl, like the fog machine hit up at the same time, so you didn't actually see anything happen to her. This one, you saw it. Why would you think she's still going to show up? You know?
Yeah.
they pulled a curtain in front of it.
Right.
But yeah, I think in terms of him saying your friend's not dead, it's supposed to be like he said you're almost at the end of the haunted house. Like he wants them to go forward.
Yeah. But they kind of bought it for a second. And I don't get that part.
Yeah. And then, at the same time,
why did they have a choice?
It's all. I think it's supposed to be mind games. I think he's supposed to be convincing them that they have a chance. But my question is, like, they must have killed that previous group really, really fast, because
they were going in.
You would think one of them would have popped up.
I didn't even see another car in the parking lot. Maybe somebody moved it, but
maybe they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all, there's a lot of really funny stuff, I think, but I think the film ultimately does really work really well. for the most
part. They had a great sense of geography inside the place too. Like you could pretty much tell where they are even before they showed the map on the wall in like the end of the second act. You had a really easy time tracking, you know, okay, they got to go here to get here. You know, this is where they are now.
Right. The rooms were distinct too.
Yeah. So you could always track where they were. And, you know, not a lot of films get that so easily as this one does, I think.
Yeah. Especially in movies that do have to already struggle with only having the one location.
Mm-hmm.
It's very impressive. Like we already kind of touched on, I think the production design in this is really pretty spectacular.
I'd go to that haunted house and I'd go again, you know, if it just looked like that, you know, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Especially the way that it, the haunted house itself escalated, you know, it started off, you know, where it's like this JC's, you know, little skeletons and spiders on the walls. And there you go. Get out of here. And then it got, you know, more devious as it goes on.
Well, I mean, that reminds me actually of a scene of that floats a little bit of that idea of like of how much danger they actually in with that when Evan and Haley, Harper, excuse me.
Harper,
when Evan and Harper are with the chainsaw guy and he
shoves, I was just going to say this.
Evan shoves him.
Right.
And
he was Evan was the first one to get physical in either direction, wasn't it? Nobody had got physical with them before that.
That's what I mean. Is I think there's an interesting element there that maybe doesn't get explored as much that I think maybe the Mitch the Friendly Ghost plays up, which is the idea of like, did they just piss them off? Because Evan shoved him, and like maybe that there's a little bit of that misdirect, maybe where maybe they really are just taking it too seriously, and maybe one guy did cut somebody. And I mean, I think it's playing with an idea that, of course, we as an audience are not going to accept. We're watching this movie. We know we're watching a horror film.
Right. We know where it's going to end up.
Yeah. We know where this is ultimately coming up. We just don't know where, you know, where it's going to end up. And I think that it is somewhat surprising. I think when it's just when they take off the masks and we do the reveal of the identification, it is jarring. I think it really does work where we're like, oh, shit, these guys are. We knew they were crazy.
I also don't think this is a movie that's built for people to watch, you know, over and over again. I think it's people to watch it, you know, one Halloween and then you're done.
I definitely agree. Yeah, like I said, watching it a second time, I was like, a lot of this, more of the flaws just sort of come up at you.
Did Evan die off screen? I'm like trying to think about Evan's death, and I remember her like looking and seeing like his slumped over body, okay.
Evan ends up in the parking lot with Mitch, and Mitch has that great, do you still want to see my face?
And he hit him with the hammer, and then he, like, took his face off with,
Yeah, he put the hammer underneath the jaw and pulled it up, and it cut away really quickly.
We didn't see him die, but we saw him on the ground dead, and then we saw him ripping his face off.
Yeah, fraction of a second with the hammer, like, under his teeth and pull up.
Right.
And, and it cut after, like, a fraction of a second, much like they did with the cut, you know. Like, this film has, like, very little gore in it. There's like no blood still,
which is fine because I don't, you know, obviously I love slasher movies and horror movies, but you know, this, the way that the haunted house was, and again, it's not really a extreme haunted house to me, but it would have undercut it some, I think, some of the tension if we just saw, you know, big fountains of gore all over the place.
That's true. Was this rated R?
That's a good question.
I don't know if it went to the theaters. I thought it was just a Shudder thing, but it
interesting.
It is rated R. According to IMDb, it is rated R.
Right. The language and the couple of gore scenes would probably make it a rated R.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot.
It looks good though. It looks good. Pretty dang good movie, despite the little nitpicks. I think that the fact that there are really only nitpicks for us to pull at is a pretty good sign about this movie. Like it's just
it's a solid horror ride, you know. It's just
exactly like a haunted house. You go through the one time, you have fun afterward, you don't think about it too much because otherwise it doesn't make sense. And you're bingo bango bongo, let's go home,
let's go get tacos now, you know.
I think that's an excellent way to start signing off too. I think that's a perfect way to put the experience. I think that you're right. This is very much like a haunt itself, that you just kind of run through it, you have a good time, and then you kind of back off.
Yeah.
Thanks, George, for being on the show with us. My pleasure. We're no Anthony DeBlasi.
You know, but we try, you know. But and again, sorry about all the technical problems we had early on. I hope that doesn't too bad.
Not a problem at all.
And if you ever want to take back that ban on Halloween too, you let me know. I'll pretend like it's my favorite movie for a day.
Oh, hell yeah.
It sounds good.
Absolutely. Hell yeah. Thank you very much, George.
Thanks.
Yep. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks, man. All right. And that's all the time we have with George from the Best Little Horror House in Philly. Also, audio cut out, so unfortunately I am without we had a ton of audio issues on this particular episode, so and again, apologize to George for that in retrospect. But we also lost Sam. So we'll just round this out myself. So once again, the crucial things you got to remember about this is we're a part of all the horror podcast grouping thing. Check it out on Podchaser, All the Horror 2020. Follow All the Horror 18 at All the Horror 18. Hashtag All the Horror is going to be the hashtag that all of the episodes are under. And check out Scares That Care. It's a great, great little charity. And as usual, I am Nathaniel. I am on Twitter at Film Hurts. Samael is at SAMMAEAL. And our general at The Devil's Ball is at Devils _ AT. Both Sam and I are also on Facebook. There's also a Facebook page, business page or whatever for At The Devil's Ball as well. So feel free to look us up. We also have a YouTube channel coming up probably in November. We're going to start posting videos there, as well as our Halloween party on is going to be up there as well. And we're going to be releasing that on itself as a podcast episode, probably maybe on the 29th or 30th. So look out for that as well. So thank you very much as usual. We appreciate any retweets, any shares, anything that you might want to give us. We love you and we love doing this. So we want to keep doing it. We want to grow, and hopefully you can be a part of that. As per usual, if you'd like to be a guest or have anything, any constructive criticisms to give, please look us up on Twitter or on Facebook, anywhere on social media. We'll love to hear from you. And we're looking forward to the next one. So with that, I will sign off as usual by saying, I have to say, as usual, love yourself, love your fellow horror fans, keep it positive, keep it constructive, and generally just stay together. It's a dark, dark world out there. So we love you, and thank you very much. Good night, and namaste. And what the hell? We're being attacked by all the horror theme music again. Damn you, All the Horror.